This talk was given by Michael Yukon Grody at the Zen Center of New York City. Yukon is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. I was just thinking... all week we've been in Sishin up at the monastery, and I'm so often in Sishin that it's for so many years I've done hundreds and hundreds of Sishins. Those are 1 week silent meditation retreats, and there were so many times during this week being here where I'd be thinking, it's 8:15, we're doing caretaking, or it's 7 o'clock, we're doing Arioki. And I'd go, I'm trying to write a whole talk on being here now. And it's like, where it's a little odd that I'm constantly thinking about what's going up in Sishin and what's going on in Sishin, and I wonder how it's going. And then I'll get a call from somebody that's doing Sishin, how are you doing? And then I get going about Sishin again. And my whole focus of this is how to really be present in the moment and be where you are. So I'm a big hypocrite. Just know that. And let's just get that out of the way now. It's incredible. But, I've had the privilege over many years to listen to many talks from many teachers. And, there are some talks that really take me away and I'm very present for, and other talks where I feel my own resistance and have not been as receptive. And this talk is, there's so many things get repeated in this practice, but it's for a reason. It's really hard to get this into our thick skulls, this practice to get it actually into our lives, to actually live it. So, and I realized in time that with patience, I'd keep dropping down, and then I realized that, I was so foggy, and that the ego keeps one thinking that, yeah, I got it. I got this. But I don't got it. Because I got it, but I don't really got it, because I'm not living it. I'm very obviously not living into this practice. So it's very humbling, and it allows you to begin again over and over and over again. This talk here is about really how to, it's all about moving closer. How do we move closer? Yutada Bhikkhu, he talks about kind of straightening the mind, how to remember. How to remember. Remember what? Well, reminding oneself to keep focusing over and over again on the true nature of our experience, not to create. This is like not to add jewels to brocade. It doesn't have to be extra, but to move in a way that is relational rather than reactive. And it is a constant practice, to have enough space to not just react, but have enough spaciousness to really make something relational, make that connection happening moment to moment to moment, if you can. Bring yourselves back to life. And being awake to the way things are, as opposed to the way we would like them to be. So this Ongo is focusing, as well we know, on how wholesome qualities arise and how unwholesome qualities decline. We all seek well-being, ease, contentment, happiness. We shrink from suffering but are caught and get stuck in the causes of suffering. Why is that? Why do we suffer so? Why do we continue to suffer despite all of the tools we have in our tool belt from this practice, from years of studying this mind? So how do we move closer? How do we get closer? How to remember all the ways we create these gaps between ourselves and what we perceive as the other, you know? To remember, to be curious, and to continue to examine our habits, because it's an endless examination. It's for a lifetime. This practice does not end. There's no little reward saying, you've done it, you're finished, now go ahead, on your way. It's for a lifetime. That's why it's called a practice. It does not end. To remember. Distractions, entertainment is everywhere. And we will indulge. You know? Take heed, do not squander your life. Being alert is the gift we give to ourselves and to others with this practice. To be awake. You know? There is a thread of the immediate experience. It's like a thread. And that thread, it's here and it's now, and we lose the thread and we get lost. And we indulge and neglect staying present. You know, what they're doing in Sesshin. You know, they're doing Orioki now. Oh man, I wonder how Orioki is going. I wonder what they're making for Orioki. I love Orioki. I love it. You know, and it's like this diatribe. It keeps going. You know. And then in that neglect, its unwholesome qualities arise and wholesome qualities decline. You know, in our Buddhist practice, it's the only thing we got. When we get lost, we tend to get caught in the I, me, mine syndrome, as well we know, right? And we study that this is not mine, that I am not this, that this is not me. We're so much larger than that, so much more spacious, you know. And so we get lost in conception. But it takes a kind of vigilance and an energy and an effort to stay present, to remember, to be curious. It's like we're these big oak trees, you know, and we're leaning in the wrong direction away from the sun, you know. Just a turn, and there you go. You got it. It's right in front of you. It's all right in front of you. You know. But it's work. It's work to straighten the mind. It takes effort. It takes diligence. It's in no way passive. You know. So what are we to do? You know. We find lots of other stuff to do, but not the stuff that connects us with reality. You know. And not the stuff that keeps us coming closer. It's like where wholesome qualities arise and unwholesome qualities decline. The Buddha talks about excessive desire, you know, and the Buddha was tough. You know, he was a pretty tough taskmaster. And he talks about, you know, about ambition, about lots of wants and lots of needs. And in and of themselves, you know, they're quite human to have ambition, and you're in a city like this, you know. But these are human qualities. But it's the clinging that leads to the expectations. And to get there, there's lots of manipulating. And there's jealousy that arises and stinginess, kind of a pulling back, you know. We have a plan and we have to meet those expectations. And to do that, we kind of get crazy. You know, we kind of get crazy. It leads to a lot of oppressing. It leads to suppressing. There's a lot of repressing. And I get very depressed. It leads to depression. Depressing. You know, what we do with the mind has impact on what happens to us further on down the line. You know, and knowing this can inspire us, knowing at the same time, waking up is all about now. It's not abstract. You know, we work so hard to develop a consciousness of no form, no boundary, no limitation, this mind, you know. You know, the three worlds are nothing but mind, form, formlessness, and desire, you know. We keep becoming. But where does this all begin and end? you know, conscious at this moment. We all have different experiences of thoughts, different bodies, different feelings, different memories, you know. But here and now, and now, here and now is not personal, you know. It's not blue or yellow, or rich or poor, or female or male, or Buddhist or Christian or Muslim, but here and now, you know. It's not personal. It's what we all live in. If we can just touch it, you know. This wisdom operates when we let go of the delusions of self and let consciousness function without force of habit, you know. That, and that habit puts us to sleep. It's like that tire that gets stuck in the rut, and it keeps turning over and over and over and over again. We get lost in that. So the second noble truth, you know, you want things, you can't get them. You get them, then you want more, right? Becomes addictive behavior, you know. You don't get them again, aversion, frustration, rage, anger, fear, worry, anxiety. You know, the Buddha doesn't say have few desires for nothing, you know. Being content, but not being complacent. You know, wholesome qualities arise with that contentment. You know, unwholesome actions can dissipate. You know, so let's say there's nothing interesting going on somewhere in your life. Somewhere. It's nothing interesting going on. Nothing very exciting. Nothing very titillating. It's just all. So how about being at peace with what you find is boring? How about that? How about that idea? It's radical, right? Rather than to change it and to try and turn it, just accept that sensibility and find peace in that. How about that? You know. So once again, I'm repeating this on purpose because I need to hear it. You know, this is all for me. You know, all of this is for me. You know, we all seek well-being and happiness and yet do the very thing that causes suffering. You know, it's amazing. We shrink from suffering but love its causes. We get caught in the causes of suffering. In case we have any confusion of what causes suffering, it's been laid out by the Buddha. And he's very succinct and it's very clear. And I'm going to turn to them and try and have my spin on it, you know. So the actions, 3 of the body, 4 of the speech, 3 of the mind, right? These things are what causes us to suffer. They're what cause us to suffer. Okay. And these causes are certainly going to be nothing new to you. Right? It's important to hear these again and again. You gotta, you know, it's over all these years of listening to this and practicing. And it's like to get it into the marrow and to live it is so challenging. It's so challenging. There's not much around us that pulls our mind in this direction. Mostly it pulls us away from ourselves. It pulls us away from getting closer, you know. So that we don't once again go to sleep to remember, to remember, to remember. So the first, don't kill, right? That's a big one, right? But wait a minute. To live, we have to kill something. There's just no question about it. In living, we kill. This alone seems so obvious, but what about developing a kind of respect for life? Not taking it for granted, to develop the sensitivity to take the time, you know, to make contact and connect viscerally and appreciate the life that we are taking, you know, appreciate the life. This very breath that I'm breathing breathes in and through all living beings. It's the same. It's not so different, you know. In the garden, there is so much life. I'm the gardener of the garden. I have the best job in the whole universe. But it's also can be intense from a Buddhist point of view. There's so much life and death going on there, you know. It's unbelievable. So there's this last year, it's just ingrained in me, on this beautiful tomato plant, right? There's this hornworm This hornworm is about this big, about this fat. It's got little horns on it. It's kind of amazing color, and it's got this red kind of stripe down the back. And I'm looking at this thing decimating my tomato plant. So I'm like, okay, all right, what am I? All right, here we go. So I'm looking at this hornworm, and I'm just studying it, and it's voracious. It's killing this plant. And I'm just looking at it going, all right, now what am I going to do? First of all, it's too big and fat to squish, and that's not a great thing for a Buddhist monk to be doing. So I'm looking at it, and then I see a predatory wasp land on the back of the hornworm. And I see this wasp lay its eggs on the back of the hornworm. I couldn't believe this. And so I see these eggs come out the back of the wasp, and then all of a sudden, it literally, half an hour later, I come back, and those little eggs are alive on the back of the worm, eating the hornworm to death. The tomato plant sends out a pheromone that is received by the predatory wasp. I'm in trouble, come and help me. And the wasp's eggs kills the hornworm. I didn't have to do anything. I'm like, whew, that's good. And it did not take long. It was kind of extraordinary. But you know, as a gardener, so I try and take the precepts and I try and take, you know, this seriously, as it's very easy to go around just doing what you think you need to do to keep these plants alive and to not take the time to wait a minute. Okay, how can I do this better? How can I do this that's in sync with precepts? You know, in sync with my life that I vowed to take up. So I have trap crops around my garden, so that they're called trap crops because they're where all the little naughty bugs go to, you know, eat and have their fun, and I don't really need them, so it's okay, I can ignore you. And then I have all of these raised beds that are A through Z. And it just happened that the one that said X, and I call it my Xbox, not realizing that there are Xboxes, I didn't know what those were. But my Xbox is where I let the weeds grow. And I let all my weeds grow in my Xbox so that I can pick the other weeds and not feel so guilty. Because I have a Jewish background and I get guilty. So I have a big box. It's about 15 feet by 4 feet wide. And I let anything grow there that wants to grow there. And Shugan Roshi thinks I'm nuts. But I think it really helps. It really helps. They get to do whatever they want. And ironically, there are a lot of things like Japanese beetles that will go right to the weeds and that will save some of my crop because I have that growing right in the middle of the garden. Anyway, I digress. But it takes time. But it takes a moment to think about what you're doing and to stop and to see if that can't be done in a way that where there's more loving kindness that's involved, is where Dogen is always saying, you know, refrain from. Taking what's not freely given, to be attentive to being awake to how much we actually need, to expand and understand what stealing is, you know. I try, and when I'm reading somebody and I really like what they're saying, you know, and I'll grab it and I'll write it down. And, you know, I think, well, that's kind of stealing. But it's Dharma stealing. It's like, so you're offering something that you couldn't possibly say any better. And so you're using it. So I there's wiggle room here. But it's not understanding what's blatant or obvious, but the subtleties of what that means. The energy of taking. How much of something can I take and still be moderate? Small things, you know, subtle things, you know. Our sensitivity to these small things. I'll get in line at the monastery and I'll see something I really want, and I'll know that there's not enough of it by the end of the line. Okay, am I gonna wait till the end of the line and let somebody else have that, or am I gonna grab it for myself? Usually, I have learned if I take it for myself, it feels really shitty. It doesn't taste so good, and I'm guilty. If I leave it, it feels so much better that somebody else is eating it. I restrained myself. I worked with this greed, you know, that I felt, that it was something I really wanted. And I was freed in that moment. There was a liberating moment. You know, we have these little liberating moments, you know. Sexual activity that is inappropriate. Well, you know, I'm a celibate, and we have to deal at the monastery all the time with this issue. You know, you live with men and women together, and we're doing something that's very intense. The life there is very intense. People of like mind come together and do intense things together. So it's like this stuff happens. It's very, very powerful energy, and we need to be mindful and pay attention. You know, there's a Burmese translation of this that says, lust cracks the brain. That was pretty good. That's Joseph Goldstein or Jack Kornfield or somebody. And there is not a group who live together that don't have this issue. And it's always the way in which you work with people. And you are hoping that they trust you enough to be able to come to you. Oftentimes that's not the case. And so we keep working and we keep finding better ways of people feeling that they have an opportunity. Because, you know, most people will be at the monastery for a month, 6 months, a year, and that will be it, and they'll go on in their lives. So it's an opportunity for them to study the Dharma. And if they can refrain from constantly being obsessed with the relationship, sexual activity, it can really help them. There's a commitment that's made, and the Guardian Council, you know, takes on people so that this can be very clear. That, you know, when you're living with a group of people like this, it's the Dharma that you're studying here, and really concentrate on what it is that you're doing, because as soon as a relationship enters into it, then the obsession with the relationship happens. And then the kind of the Dharma disappears. And then all kinds of stuff happens around that. So not to indulge the fear of feeling it. We practice having the opportunity at a place such as the monastery to seek out help, you know, to talk with us and explore what it's like to practice what it is that we want to do. You know, what we want. You know, the desire of having to have. You know, just a genuine, lasting happiness is the fulfillment of our desire, and that is never true. Never. Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, the big three. They are that body that causes suffering. So right speech, this is a great practice. How powerful is speech, you know? So much suffering comes from us not paying attention to what we say or how we say what we say, you know? You know, the obvious don't lie. It's obvious, but there's so many subtle levels of lying. You know, exaggeration, you know? Some self-protection. You know, our ego needs to be advanced. You know, some are deliberate where the intention is to cause disruption, it's to cause harm. Why do we do what we do? To really keep exploring and examining that, you know, how to bring ourselves closer, closer, to remember. We get greedy and then self-aggrandizement, you know, especially in a place like a city. You know, shading the truth in one way or another. Watch our speech. All the subtle ways untruths can come out, you know. Our tendency is to cover ourselves, you know, but to stay curious and to be alert and to remember. It's like a mantra. It's a great mantra, really. Remember. Stay curious. Be awake. Examine. Remember. Stay curious. And try to remember that you've not seen through to the bottom. You'll never see through to the bottom. I don't care how realized you are. I have never met anybody that's seen through to the bottom. It's practice. Courage to be this honest with ourselves, certainly a gift of practice. Angry speech, great power to hurt. The energy behind our speech. Be on the receiving end of angry, harsh speech. It hurts. You know. Is this the way I want to connect with somebody? To have enough space not to be reactive. That's the trick, gang. It's like have enough room. Have enough spaciousness. Because it's not all about you. It's relational. It's about being in relationship. You know, to be able to be skillful. So we can use that energy. Keeping in mind whether what I say is creating a loving spirit. And is creating harmony. Gossip is a big one, and I suck. I love gossip. Especially we talk about each other, especially when teachers are misbehaving. I'm so bad. And it's really, what is that? You know, and I try and examine my tendencies, you know. Will we raise ourselves above another? We're going, oh, look at their teacher and look at what they're doing. Aren't they shitty? You know? It's like, what is that about? You know, they've received the transmission. What is that about? Look what they're doing. You know, that, ugh, it's so gross. You know, it's so gross. The impulse to speak of others. And why the delight? Why the delight in that? Why are we so motivated to speak of others in that kind of way? The impulse to see it, and why delight? What's skillful? And attempt to be as clear as you can be as far as what your intention is here. And talking about somebody in this way, you know, what are you really trying to do? What's going on? These are patterns that were set up in us automatically. Gossip, it's so strong in us. So it's like there's a great, it's called somapalapa. It's blah, 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 blah. It's Burmese for useless talk. Somapalapa, it sounds like it. Somapalapa, blah, 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 blah. You know, worthless words. You know, just talk. Empty talk. Wasting precious quiet. There is nothing that serves other than taking up that space unnecessarily. But it feels so good for just a little bit, and then you feel really crappy. You know, plenty of useless chatter already going on in our heads, man, without exacerbating it. If we can refrain from speech that's like that, maybe we can begin to calm the mind. That's the activity of this practice, to calm the mind. What causes suffering? How we talk, how we speak to each other. Actions of mind, hungry ghost stuff, you know, we can never get enough. It's like constantly feeding ourselves, you know. Always wanting what others have. The opposite of taking delight in others' happiness. You know the practice is working when you see somebody doing something that it really is not, you're not so good at, and they're doing it really well, and it makes you happy. You know that this is actually arising in you automatically. It's like that kind of happiness, you know, that you know that the gap is getting smaller and smaller because you're so happy that they're doing well, so happy that they're healthy and that they're continuing to develop in ways that, you know, are harder for you. You know, so strong. And who is the other anyway? You know, there is no other. And we just think there is. The five courses of speech that others may use, timely or untimely. It's all the skillful means, you know. True or untrue, gentle or harsh, connected with good or connected with harm, spoken with a mind of loving kindness or a mind of hate. You know, abide in compassion for their welfare, of beings with a mind of loving kindness, how we feel, how we respond, how we relate. It's all up to us. You know, it's all up to us, moment to moment to moment. And then the last is wrong view. You know, this not understanding, not considering the laws of karma. You know, maybe subtle, but there is always a result from skillful and unskillful actions. You know, we may not know what they are. These misperceptions, if we feel there is no, it's a misperception to feel that there's no consequence to what we do. It just might not be, you know, immediate. You know, I generally these days, my karma, when I do something really crummy, my karma is pretty immediate. Although it's like a slap in the face. And so that's the gift, you know, that I see it. It doesn't have to be worked out, or it doesn't have to be over a period of weeks or months. You know, it's right there. You know, it hurts. So without understanding what causes happiness and what causes suffering, because we have a wrong view, we don't stop and consider the result of our actions. Another aspect you could call the root cause. And then we reinforce the view of the self. Every time we identify with an experience, right? We reinforce that root cause that we actually, you know, there is a self that's separate from everything else.
my thoughts, my feelings, I'm happy, I'm in charge. You're in charge of what exactly? You know, the I or mine is extra. This is not mine. I am not this. This is not me. The last difficulty of the self, to release the self, the identification we have with awareness, you know. It's easy to say don't cling to anything. The mind of not clinging. You know, if you don't cling, whatever arises is naturally freed. Well, that's easy to say. You know, the sutras, you know, of the canons, everything, that's really easy to say. It's really, really hard to do. Staying in the experience rather than getting caught up in a philosophical debate. You know, don't recondition your mind with another conclusion. You know, let the Dharma unfold. Stay in not knowing. Be in the experience. Stay in the openness. Easy to say. Really hard to do. You know, we read these things and we study them, but to really get them in our marrow, it's just like, it's tremendous concentration and effort. What causes freedom is not about doing what we want when we want it. That's just more addiction. You know, freedom is in the wisdom to choose wisely, understanding what suffers and what doesn't, when something wholesome arises and something unwholesome declines. It's from the Dhammapada. In the Dhammapada, it's happiness is having friends when the need arises. Happiness is contentment with whatever there is. Happiness is merit at the end of one's life. And I'm going to be 70 in May. It is the abandonment of all suffering. In the world, it is respect from one's mother and father, respect for renunciants, virtue, steadfast faith, not doing what's unskillful. Easy to say, you know, but they're still precious words. If we could really get them in our marrow, they could be so helpful. So, may you be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May you have happiness and the causes of happiness. May we all continue to develop knowledge and wisdom to gain more and more contact with the way things truly are, as opposed to the way that we would like them. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.